demonstrating a Macintosh is the only way to do it. You got to show somebody. I can't really describe it to you in words, but if I can get you to sit in front of it and play with it, you won't let go of it.
Find out what Macintosh is all about. Ask your authorized Apple salesperson to give you a hands-on introduction to Macintosh. Discover Macintosh and see the difference firsthand.
Hello and welcome to the Goldcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Erfan Elijah. Joining me today, after seeing him cliff jump, the Phoenix natives dubbed him Flying Pelt. Buster Craig is here.
Just a massive ball of fur coming at you.
Also joining us, his great-great-grandmom invented a move we know today as the keg stand. Leander Kegstand Caney is here.
Hello, boys.
Is there anything better in life than just being in a full-on keg stand, Leander? Just having two blokes hold your legs while you just polish off the keg? This sounds like a typical Saturday night at the Caney household.
I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about.
You've never done a keg stand.
I've never done a keg stand.
I find that hard
either.
To believe. Neither of you guys have done keg stands.
Dude, we didn't throw it out in college like you did, man. Yeah, I know what it is. But I did burrow
pretty hard.
I don't know. I don't understand the appeal of a keg stand. Like, it doesn't make it easier to drink, does it?
No, it actually makes it harder. Don't
yeah, exactly.
All these things just make it harder? That's the whole point. Is because it makes it harder, it makes it more entertaining. It's like you hear about all these ridiculous, asinine ways to like that people smoke pot, right?
Yeah.
Like, doesn't it just work normal if you just put it in like a pipe and just smoke it? But no, you gotta like put it on the stove, and then you gotta put like a bucket of water in front of it, and then you gotta pull up like a 2-liter and fill the whole thing with smoke. It's like there's all these like devices that people create just to make these normal activities more fun. A kickstand, for those that don't know, is when some of your friends, they grab your legs, and it's best when you don't know it's about to happen. So you're standing in front of the keg and they grab your legs, and so you grab onto the keg and they lift your legs in the air, and then they put the tap in your mouth and they start making you drink, and all your bros are just yelling, drink, drink, drink.
Oh man, that sounds like so much fun, bro. Yeah, let's do kickstand.
Yeah. And then you get down and you just go, and beer goes everywhere, and then you rip your shirt off. Leander?
No, not ringing a bell at all. No, not my kind of thing.
We should try, if we ever have another cult cast party, we should try one of these.
Okay, all right. Well, we're going to have one at WWDC next year, so we'll do that.
Are you seriously announcing that? So we've talked about this, but we haven't made any actual formal decisions. If you say we're going to do it, we're definitely going to do it.
Yeah, we're definitely doing a party.
If we do it, will you do a kickstand?
Sure, why not?
Yeah.
We'll have a kickstand, beer pong, you know.
Beer pong, wow. We should start our own cult cast fraternity. It's going to be like old school.
Right, it's going to be really old school.
Super the paddle thingy.
What paddle?
No, you know, don't fraternities always have like a big paddle and stuff that, you know.
Oh, to like spank people who are not listening?
Inductees or whatever they're called.
Inductees.
Pledges.
And everyone knows the inductees have to be spanked with a giant pledge paddle. Everyone knows that. I completely forgot. Yeah. Okay, well, we actually do have some Apple stuff to talk about this week. It's going to be a packed show. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. Let's see here. So we're going to be talking about the original idea for the iPhone and where it came from, the origin of the iPhone. And this is a story that you have never heard before, I promise you. We're also going to be talking about Apple's AR and how it's going to be used by a company in a cool kind of novel way, I think, and just the AR platform in general. I know some people don't really get why Apple's doing AR, but I think it's fascinating, and we'll talk a little bit more about that and why that's interesting. And then we're going to do more of the best features in iOS 11. I feel like there's just endless amounts of new features in here that are actually pretty cool and things that you're going to enjoy once you get iOS 11 installed. And Leander, are you going to talk about like the look and feel of iOS 11? And
sure, yeah.
Okay.
I can,
you want to do that?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. So Leander will talk about that as well. Before we start with this iPhone origins story, let me go ahead and say thank you to Blue Apron for supporting this episode. Springtime is a great time to hit the reset button and retackle personal goals like getting fit, cleaning, and cooking. Luckily, Blue Apron makes incredible home cooking easy and accessible by delivering to you seasonal recipes with step-by-step instructions and pre-portioned ingredients. They ship everything right to your door, all for less than $10 per meal. You can also customize your recipes based on your preferences and select delivery options that fit you best. And there is no weekly commitment, so you only get the deliveries that you want. Some of the upcoming meals are warm smoked trouts and asparagus salad with fingerling potatoes and garlic croutons, spiced zucchini enchiladas and creamy lime and tomato rice, elote style vegetable tostadas. Oh, Buster, sounds like right up your alley. With a summer squash, poblano peppers and cilantro rice, peach glazed chicken with mashed potatoes, collard greens, and Thai basil. Let me give a little personal recommendation. If you haven't tried out Blue Apron, I've been using it for months now, and all the meals that I've had have been delicious. It's super easy, and the thing I think I like most about it is you learn how to cook meals from genres that you probably would never attempt to cook without all the ingredients being delivered to you and without step-by-step instructions that are easy to follow. So it actually helps you learn how to cook better, and we've made some of the recipes again, even after we made the recipe the first time because we liked them so much. You can get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/cultcast, blueapron.com/cultcast. There's no reason not to try it. You get your first three meals free. You're getting three free meals. Just go try it. blueapron.com/cultcast. Blue Apron is a better way to cook. All right. One of my favorite people has resurfaced. He's risen from the dead. iOS, former iOS chief, Scott Forstall. He ended up at a talk on Tuesday night at the Computer History Museum in California, Mountain View, where he discussed the birth of the iPhone and his relationship with Steve Jobs. It's the first time he's spoken publicly since he was ousted from Apple in October of 2012, I think. Have you guys heard anything from him since he was pushed out? I guess he did that play or that musical.
Yeah, and he won an Emmy. I think he did an interview.
Oh, that's right. He did win an Emmy.
Or a Tony. That's what it was.
Well, yeah, he hasn't done much except, winning Tonys.
And he works he's an advisor for Snapchat, too. Huh.
I mean, he's so rich, yeah. He probably doesn't need to do anything. I would imagine the guy has hundreds of millions of dollars if he helped forge iOS. So he probably doesn't need to do anything. He's just doing passion products. But I got to say, I'm impressed about how quiet he's been. He hasn't been out there bashing Apple or talking crap about them. He's just been very honorable.
Even in that interview, he probably had a few opportunities to talk crap about Apple and what they're doing now. And he didn't really take any shots at them.
That's true. So he didn't take any jabs.
That was nice of him, I guess.
And people said who were there at the talk that he actually was really good at telling stories, which I always respect because telling stories is really hard. And he said, first off, he was talking about skeuomorphic design, because he's the father of skeuomorphism. And he said that the concept of skeuomorphic design was not one that they really intentionally created. They never even really heard of skeuomorphic design when they were working on iOS. It was just that it just seemed like such a natural idea to create software that looked like things that exist in the world because people then know how to interact with that software. Let me read you this quote. He said, "When I look at design, when I look at good design, it's approachable, friendly, and you can use it without a manual. It's fun. We talked a lot about photo illustrative design. It was infused into the design sense of Apple by Steve Jobs since the original Mac. It doesn't mean that I loved it." This is the part that I thought was interesting. "It doesn't mean that I loved it or every single part of it. We just know that it worked. How do we know it worked? You just have to watch people use it."
It reminded me when I got the first iPhone, as soon as I opened up the box, my kids grabbed it. And they were playing around with it, for half an hour. And they figured the whole thing out. Everything you could do on it immediately. So intuitive, really delightful. They were squealing with delight. It was super fun. It really was a kick, and not many devices do that, new devices. Where you can just pick it up and kids can immediately figure out how to use a thing.
And even iOS now, in some ways, it's got the more simplified, streamlined design. But sometimes it's harder to understand, where menus are at, settings, tapping on certain things. It's not as obvious sometimes, I think, the new design language Apple went with. So I think in many ways, like, Forstall's got a good point that it was super easy to use. But maybe that time did pass, and now that everybody had enough time to learn it, now we could graduate it onto, like, a new type of design language for it. So I don't think, like, skeuomorphism or photorealistic design was a bad thing either.
I don't either. In fact, hearing him describe it, I kind of miss it, having like the leather thing at the top of the calendar. having Game Center didn't have like a green felt.
Yeah, something. See, like, and that was the thing, was sometimes Apple took it too far. Like you're saying, Game Center was horrible. The leather stitching in, what was that? Like Find My Friends or something like that. The Notes app.
It was also in the calendar app.
Yeah. There was all kinds of like just bad choices with it too, but I thought a lot of like the buttons and menu options and stuff were usually, and the navigation was a lot more intuitive sometimes.
I gotta say though, I like the old Game Center more than I like the new Game Center. I think the new Game Center, the icon's terrible.
Yeah.
And the app itself, actually they got rid of the app, it doesn't even exist anymore, it just exists inside games, doesn't it? But the previous design, I thought it was a bit cheeky and definitely very gaudy, but it did the job, and I totally see his point here. Well, where things got really interesting is when Scott spoke about the origins of the iPhone, the true origins. So he said that the iPhone was conceived initially by Jobs, and he wanted it to be a tablet with capacitive touch and multi-touch in order to get over on someone who he hated, who worked at Microsoft. So the origins of the iPhone began with Steve Jobs' hate of someone at Microsoft. Quote, he said, "It began because Steve hated this guy at Microsoft." That is the actual origin, Forstall said, before adding that it wasn't Bill Gates. Definitely Ballmer. It was definitely Ballmer. after hearing the person boast about Microsoft's tablet and stylus development, said Forstall, Steve came in on Monday. There was a set of expletives, and then he said, "Let's show them how it's really done." Damn you, Palmer. So, isn't that just incredible? Steve Jobs hated someone so much at Apple that he wanted to create a product that showed them that would show them up. And here we are, all these years later, 10 years later, with one of the most successful technology devices ever created. It just goes to show, too, that aside from what you hear, hate is more powerful than love. The emperor was right. You do need to let the hate flow through you.
That story's been, it was in Walter Isaacson's book, too, I think, right?
Oh,
was
really?
Yeah, and I think Scott told it at the Apple-Samsung trial. But I think, you know, the Johnny Ive and the industrial design team and maybe some of the other sort of rank-and-file members of Apple, the guys, in fact, you know, who were playing around with it originally, were in the Macintosh input engineering group. They were the ones who were in charge of keyboards and mice, and they were the ones who were first playing around with multi-touch, because they were trying to come up with like a soft keyboard, you know, like a one of those keyboards that would just be like a sheet of glass, and you know, the keyboard would come up onto the screen, and they could use multi-touch to do the input of the keys. So they were playing around with the prototypes. That was what they were originally thinking of doing it, and then they showed it to, you know, Johnny Ive's industrial design team, and you know, from the industrial design team's perspective, that, you know, they say that they started playing around with turning it into a tablet using, like, you know, old PowerBook parts and having it run OS X. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, you know, like, so they had prototypes in the lab already, which is, you know, when Steve Jobs came in and started swearing and saying they were going to build a tablet to better Apple's.
We're going
to
show Steve Ballmer who we are.
Yeah, so that, you know, like, I think it plays up this, like, I think the interesting thing about, you know, Scott Forstall's talk, and also, you know, did you read some extracts on this new book about from the motherboard editor about the origins of the iPhone?
This is Forstall's new book?
No, it's not Forstall. Oh. It's not clear, but because I haven't seen the book yet and I haven't read it, but he's quoted in it, and they had an extract in The Verge last week. It's a new book by the motherboard editor, and it looks like he interviewed a whole bunch of people. So a whole bunch of people started talking. So maybe, you know, the NDAs are running out, and or people are just getting, you know, bolder, or maybe just because of the 10th anniversary coming up next week, you know, people wanted to talk. I know it's a source of frustration amongst Apple staffers, you know, that Steve Jobs gets all the credit. And
yeah,
and this story totally plays into that, you know, that kind of myth-making at Apple where it's like, oh, it was Steve Jobs' idea. You know, Steve Jobs dreamed up the iPad, and he told his folks to go do it. And I think what's clear from that, this book that's coming out is that it's actually like, you know, the origins of these technologies are much more bottom up.
What does that like, sound?
Yeah. They're doing some construction work next door.
it sounds like somebody was moving a desk across the floor.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, is Leander moving his desk while he's talking?
They're doing a driver into the wall, you know? It's like...
You know what it sounds like? Like, you know, like those old school pictures, like those guys where they're each at the end of one saw and they're like pulling it back and forth through the tree? It sounds like that. Jeez Louise, go out there.
It's really loud here. I can't hear myself talk, which is probably just as well.
I'm surprised you were able to complete that thought with that terrible noise going on in the background.
Yeah.
Well, this is a good opportunity to say, if you haven't checked out any of Leander's books, he's written like 73 books about Apple. And what was the newest one? The genius behind Johnny Ive, right? I can't say the title. What is it?
Yeah, Johnny Ive, the genius behind Apple's greatest
products. Oh, there you go. Okay, so I'm sure some of this information is also in your book, yeah?
Yeah, it's all there. I mean, actually, we're publishing an extract, the iPhone design chapter, next week from the book. And I dug up a whole bunch of pictures of prototypes, you know, all the stuff that was leaked during the Apple-Samsung trial and some sketches and stuff like that. So I'm putting all that into context, which I think is the first time anyone's done that. You know, like these have been dumped on the web, but you didn't really know what you were looking at. And I got one of the designers, Doug Satzker, to walk me through it and explain, you know, what the prototypes were, where they came into the different process, what they were thinking about, how they had two leading designs competing against each other, the Extrudo and the Sandwich designs.
Is this for the iPhone?
For the iPhone, yeah, for the iPhone prototype in the industrial design studio. So, you know, it puts all that into context and explains how they came up with the design for the original iPhone and some of the problems they faced and
I can't believe he was willing to talk to you about that. It seems like it would be top secret forever type information.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, you know, that was a major coup. That's what allowed me to write the book, because I mean, I got, you know, one of the designers who'd worked there for more than a dozen years to talk, and he told me a whole bunch of stuff. That was the backbone of the book, really. You know, that, and fleshed out with interviews.
Did he know you were writing a book, or did he just?
I told him exactly what I was doing. Yeah.
Wearing a secret camera, just buttering him up, taking him to dinner. He's like, I met this new guy named Leander Kinney. He's the nicest guy. He takes me to dinner. He buys me drinks. We went to the movies.
Asked a lot of questions. Yeah. He's really interested in my career. He keeps on asking about Johnny Ive, though. I wonder why.
Yeah, really interested in work that I did at Apple. I guess he just wants to get to know me better. Is this new chapter excerpt, is it going to be available on its own, or what's the deal with that, Leander?
Well, I'm publishing it on the website. I previously published it, like half of it on Medium when the book came out, but the publisher would only let us publish half the chapter, which I was really frustrating. I got in a big fight with them about it. But, you know, they only want half the chapter, out there. So this time I'm going to put the whole chapter up and put all the pictures in that I wanted to include in the first place. So I think it's, you know, stronger than what was published before.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about this new iOS 11 virtual button buster. It just seems like Apple is just not even trying to hide this stuff anymore. It's just like, here, just take it. You guys know what we're doing anyway. We're getting rid of the home button. We're doing a single panel. iPhone with Touch ID anywhere in the screen. You can just touch it the top left corner, top right corner, anywhere you want. Touch ID on the entire screen, right?
I don't think so.
I'm joking. It's a joke. Part's a joke. Referring to last show. But they discovered a virtual button, a home button, isn't that right?
Kind of, yeah. There's like a new Siri icon in iOS 11, and it's like perfect for a home button like replacement. And you can also see it in the settings app, like it's the new icon for Siri and search, and it's just like the Siri waveform with a circle around it. And in some instances when you're using Siri, you can kind of get it to come up, and it's like in the perfect spot where the home button would be on like the iPhone 8 if it was a bezel-free screen. So it seems like, yeah, Apple just left it in there. Thinking we wouldn't notice, or just whatever, you know.
Thinking we wouldn't notice. If people crawl over every single thing in all of these betas looking for something, right? Because the first person to discover something like this gets a ton of hits on their website.
Yeah, and a lot of developers will be going through all of the little files and the beta builds over the next few weeks, and I'm sure we'll get more clues of other little things for the iPhone 8 that Apple might have left in there.
Leander, I know you're using iOS 11 right now, and you're using watchOS 4, and you said that you liked the overall look and polish of it, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's super awesome. Yeah, like, you know, against as usual, I installed it on all of my devices, and it's actually been kind of pretty stable, pretty good, and especially the beta 2, like, fixed a lot, you know, some of the glitches that were in the first one. And I think, yeah, overall, it looks great, especially on the iPad. I really love the new dock. That works really, really well.
What is it that you like about it?
It gives you easy access to all your apps that you use, you know, really, really easily. Like, I used to do the old double click trick where I double click on the home button and it would, and then I'd have to sort of swipe through the windows or the cards to choose, you know, like, you know, to switch apps. It was kind of quicker than going to the home screen and then hunting for the icon. So now they're all just there in the dock. You know, you hit the home button, there's a dock, there's all your frequently used apps, and it's really easy to switch between apps using that. I've done a little bit of the multi-window stuff, not too much. I haven't done any dragging and dropping, actually. I did do a little bit of dragging and dropping. That works really well, especially when you're using, like, when you set up the multi-window thing. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. I like the look of the new app store. I like the card interface there. They use this new card metaphor for different apps.
Oh, really? Because, Buster, you don't really like it, do you?
No, I hate the app store now.
I mean, I haven't used it yet, but the pictures that I saw, I thought it was definitely a step backward because it makes it so that you have to do a lot more scrolling.
So much more scrolling, like these big blocks of the screen. It's like Apple gave us these big freaking iPhone screens, and now you can only see one app at a time when you're in the app store. It's like, come on. Like, I just think that was a really bad decision.
But Leander likes it. Well, what is it that you like about it?
It's really bold and it's not so busy. Like, I found the other, you know, if you look at the, say the iTunes Store, which they haven't changed the interface of, you know, it's there's so much going on. Mm-hmm. It's difficult. Nothing's really that compelling. You know, there's all this. It's just a mass of links. It's like looking at a busy website. You know, go to some of these, like a really bold, badly designed website, and they've thrown up, you know, every single thing that they're doing onto the front page, and you know, it's overwhelming. There's just too much going on. I think this is much cleaner, much simpler. It's actually more, you know, it's nicer to sort of scroll or browse for the casual. It's designed for the sort of casual browsing. You know, you can just go down and look at these big cards, and it makes a much more compelling case for each of these individual apps.
When are they going to release iOS 11 for the public beta? I'm still using iOS 10 because they haven't released it yet. I know you guys are on the developer preview. Wasn't it supposed to be this month?
It is supposed to come out this month, and they just dropped the second beta, so I'm imagining it might come out maybe the end of next week or the end of this week.
I guess it makes sense. They want to make sure they iron out some of the bugs for the public beta, because like the public is going to be less forgiving mm-hmm. than developers would be, for sure. Well, there was one other part about iOS 11. Well, we're going to cover some of the best parts here in a moment, but there's one other part that had a story this week, and that was the AR capabilities that they're building in to iOS 11. Augmented reality and virtual reality, but specifically augmented reality, are becoming really hot, especially in video games. And I think augmented reality is really interesting in that it's kind of like Pokemon Go, or as Tim Cook calls him, Pokemon.
Pokemon?
And you shine your screen at something, and then there's something digital on the screen that interacts with whatever's on your screen. So it's the interplay of digital content with real life content. And one of the companies that's going to be jumping on this right from the get-go, right from when iOS 11 is launched, is IKEA. They have revealed some new details about their augmented reality collaboration with Apple, and it's going to let customers test out virtual pieces of furniture in their homes before they buy them. So you point your phone at your living room and you can cycle through different pieces of furniture and see what it looks like inside your actual house, which I think is pretty useful. Don't you, Leander?
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, because you seem pretty lukewarm on augmented reality before.
I just discovered this, I showed it to Buster, this new feed on Twitter made with AR kits, mm-hmm. where someone's showcasing like all of these different demos that are popping up on Twitter. And some of them are really jaw-dropping. You know, really, really amazing. It really does look really, really compelling. I mean, I haven't seen demos as good as these in AR before. So these make it look really, really great. Like, in fact, I'm really excited about it. I really can't wait to play with it. It looks awesome. It looks like it's going to be a lot of fun and really useful as well. Like, I played with a couple of those. I've had a 3D design thing before, and there's some third-party app that did like some kind of IKEA-like stuff, and it was just sort of crappy. You know, it was like such a bad rendering. Mm. It was so unrealistic that it's like, what's the point of doing it? You know, because it just doesn't. It doesn't give you a really good impression, but the realism of some of these objects in these demos that I've seen on this Twitter feed, you know, really make it look awesome. Because they look like real objects that you're seeing in a real setting. They interact with the setting. They cast shadows, you know?
Yeah, like that demo they showed at WWDC where they showed the different shadows, you know, affecting that object in the AR demo. Well, the IKEA app will at first let you cycle through 500 to 600 different products and try them out in your home. And the technology will allow you to position the items on real backdrops in 3D with millimeter accurate positioning. And IKEA is actually aiming to debut new products in the app before they even arrive in the store. So you'll be able to order stuff, you know, in the app that you can't get anywhere else. And this is the part that I thought was really interesting. Michael Valdsgaard, he's the digital transformation manager. The digital transformation manager, what does that guy even do? At IKEA. And he said Apple's augmented reality platform was of interest to IKEA because of its guaranteed reach. Quote, it will be the largest AR platform in the world overnight, he said. That's super interesting to us. Which struck a chord with me because AR is kind of this esoteric thing. Most people have never experienced it. They've never used it. They don't even know what it is. And then overnight, it's going to become ubiquitous. And it's going to become the largest AR platform in the world. And there's been other companies that have been playing around with AR, like Microsoft comes to mind with their HoloLens. And there's been a lot of companies playing around with VR, even though it's been relatively niche because the equipment that you need to use it is expensive, and if you use it on some games, it'll make you yak like you've never yacked before. So all of a sudden, you're going to have this huge AR platform that's going to give you access to, I don't even know how many people, you know, how many Apple customers are there out there?
Supposedly a billion iOS devices in active use, right? So
wow, in active use. Yeah. I've heard that number before, but I didn't know if that was like actively being used. So all of a sudden, overnight, you're going to have AR, hopefully, everywhere. And like you, Leander, I think it's going to be incredibly powerful. It's going to be crazy to see what people can do with it. It seems to me like it's going to be a whole new computer paradigm, like an interaction paradigm that's never really existed before.
Right.
And you're going to start seeing, you know, everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's totally true. Yeah, absolutely. You know, like with IKEA, you know, one of the useful things that it might do is it'll see whether something will fit, you know, before you have to go down to the store. So if that couch will actually fit in that corner.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
If it's millimeter accuracy, you know, then you can see, you know, you can try out a bunch of different options and see what'll fit exactly, whether it'll fit in that corner or, you know, in that part of the room and how it'll look. I think it'll be, yeah, you know, you can see it. And, you know, and then all that stuff. Do you remember there was a really great demo that came out, I think it was last year. It might have been earlier this year. Some guy in Brazil or South America made a video of what the world might look like with AR on, with all the different information feeds you're going to be getting. Because, you know, like in the world of IoT, you know, all these different devices could be giving off information that will interact with your phone, like via beacons or Bluetooth LE, and or maybe some other protocol, you know, that hasn't been enacted. And if you're getting information from these devices, you know, it throws up all this stuff. So you could point your camera at a scene and it'll show you, you know, like where restaurants are, where ATMs are, you know, what different landmarks are, you know, for getting directions, for maps, you know, you'll see like arrows actually on the sidewalk or on the road, telling you when to turn, stuff like that.
Oh,
you know,
man,
like,
yeah.
This whole information layer that's layered over the scene that you're looking at. And this demo was really kind of jaw-dropping because it, you know, showed all the potential. In fact, it was kind of overwhelming because there was information everywhere. You know, the guy gets on a bus and then there's like information about the people on the bus and the bus driver and the destination and how long it's going to get to the next stop and, you know, what different specials, all this advertising that was being projected onto the inside of the windows and all this kind of stuff. So it was kind of like, you know, Minority Report, like gone crazy. But it was fun. You know, it's a fun demo showing all the possibilities for this. And I think, you know, I'm really excited about it because, like I said, I think it really is like a brand new paradigm that's really going to be really, I think, well, you know, if it's done well, really compelling.
Two quick thoughts. It would be amazing to have all this information available to you in like some type of Apple eyewear, even like a half helmet. I keep thinking of it as like a helmet with like a glass display that goes over your face.
Well, this
like
is
you're in Tron or something.
Right.
Yeah.
This is definitely leading up to that kind of technology, right?
That would be amazing. And second thing, it's going to give us the vision that we see in Terminator 2. Remember when he's walking around and there's like that red screen sizing everyone up, showing him like danger notifications and notifications about this and that. That's going to be amazing. We're all going to have Terminator vision.
I just wanted to flash up someone's name when I see him at a party so I don't mess it up again. Oh, nice to meet you. Yeah, we just met last week. I do that all the time.
That would be super helpful, just to bring your iPhone up to your eyes and scan the room, and it shows you everyone's names. Right. Yeah. I could definitely use that in my life, for sure. Yeah. I remember people's faces, no problem. I'm like, hey, I know your face. And I'm just going to do my best to pretend like I know your name, but I don't actually know your name anymore. It's been way too long. Okay, well, let's go ahead and jump into all the cool new features in iOS 11. As I said last week at the start of the show this week, there's so much stuff that we've had to break this apart into multiple segments because we just can't cover it all in one show. So let me go ahead and start with one of the biggest things that is one of the biggest changes in iOS 11 that I think is cool, and you probably haven't heard about this one, and it's going to affect you for sure, even though you may not notice it. This is the switch from JPEG, which is the image format that was developed in 1992 and the dominant image format of today for virtually all smartphones and cameras, to HEIF, which is the format Apple is adopting in iOS 11. In fact, most phones that switch to iOS 11 will be switching from JPEG to HEIF. So what does HEIF stand for? First of all, it's the High Efficiency Image File Format. It's a modern image file format. And here's what's cool about it. It will store images at roughly half the size of JPEG. So immediately you're going to save a ton of space if you have a lot of photos because HEIF is so much more efficient. But more than that, it is actually more efficient at storing those bits than JPEG. So your images will look better even though they're going to take up half the size. One of the other parts about it that's cool is, unlike JPEG, which just supports one image at a time, HEIF can support single images or a sequence of images, which you might think immediately of live photos. So I don't know what that means for live photos. Maybe that means they're going to take up a lot less space. Well, they probably will, since HEIF is so much more efficient. So you're going to have smaller images that look better, and then also there's going to be hardware support for H.265, which is HVEC, the video version of this new technology. Leander, I heard you thinking about something. Were you about to say something?
No, I was thinking about something else. I don't know.
Oh, I heard you go, like you're getting ready. You're warming up that palate to say something really interesting. Buster, any thoughts?
How are we gonna pronounce this new file name? Is it Hif or Heif or Haif?
I kind of like Hif. Hif.
Hif.
Hif. Hif. Yeah, it's not as easy to say, is it?
That's a JPEG, no.
Or maybe Hif.
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 Yeah.
Hif. I don't want to say Hif because that sounds too much like Alex E. Hif.
Well, I don't want to say H-E-I-F because that just takes forever.
Yeah, you're right. It's really kind of terrible to say that. But it takes way too long.
It sounds super cool. I can't remember if you said this already, but one of the super benefits is that you can have it as a single image file or multiple image file, which is like perfect for Apple's live photos feature. So I'm sure it's going to be huge, hopefully. And like the space saving feature will be the best thing about it.
I wonder if, and I couldn't find this information out before we started recording, I wonder if it's going to go through your iCloud library and convert everything to
all the old JPEGs and the HIFs.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that would be cool, right? Because that way you would free up, half your space. Yeah. Or maybe a little less if you're mostly video, like, you know, I guess I am. But yeah, that would be so pretty cool if you could do that.
Does Apple use HVEC video format for its videos?
I'm not sure if they're using that yet or if they're switching to it in iOS 11.
Yeah, because most of your files come out as like .mp4s or .movs on a Mac or an iPhone. So it's, I don't know anything about it. I was wondering if they're going
to
make those.
Yeah, I know they're moving to H.265 slowly. I mean, I don't know if they're going to make it the standard for video in iOS 11, but a lot of people are moving to H.265. I mean, even DJI is starting to support H.265, although you can't really use it to the fullest benefits Well, that's a bad way to say it. You can't do as much with H.265 as you can with H.264 on the DJI products for whatever reason. Maybe it's because it's more like processor intensive or something. Mm. But in any case, one of the other thoughts I had was, well, if Apple moves to this new format, I mean, the iPhone's the most popular camera in the world, right? So I wonder if everyone is just going to move to this new format. It would be weird if it were just Apple.
Yeah.
Yeah, when they've done this kind of stuff in the past, I think it's tended to follow Apple's leads, right? Like, you know, the whole QuickTime thing with the QuickTime file formats, that became the emphasis for MPEG-4. Mm-hmm. So, but I guess on the standards body's got to take it up. But I wonder how long it'll take to unseat JPEG. It's been around for, what, 30 years or more?
Like, yeah, 1992. Isn't that crazy?
I feel like it's going to be hard to kill JPEGs.
They'll probably be around. There'll probably be some people that hold on to it, you know, for a while. But if Apple switches to the new format, I mean, that's going to cover pretty much everyone.
I mean,
because they're not even going to know they're switching.
Yeah, and I mean, the big thing about it is what format the images are captured in, you know. So if everybody's shooting pictures on their iPhone and your iPhone is shooting them in HEIF, then JPEGs are just going to naturally slowly die because your iPhone's not shooting it that way anymore.
Well, especially because people who are selling SD cards, compact flash cards, they can say it holds, their cards hold twice as many images now. So they can store twice as many images without having to do anything. So I think there's going to be a push by camera makers and for people that sell storage to support the new format just because it makes them look better. I mean, why wouldn't you support the new format? I mean, it's more efficient and your images look better.
Yeah.
It just kind of seems like a no-brainer, right? Well, one of the other cool new features is automatic setup, Buster. Can you you've been playing around with the iOS 11? Tell us a little bit about this one.
I have used iOS 11, and you know, like when you get a new phone and you have to go through, it feels like 15 or 17 different screens to get everything all set up.
It's a huge pain in the arse, isn't it?
It's a total pain in the ass, especially when you've done it like before and everything. But with iOS 11, that's finally getting easier. Like you just sign in using your Apple ID that's been set up on another device, and it basically zips you through the whole process so that you can start using your iPhone or iPad almost immediately instead of...
It slurps up all your necessary settings and stuff into your new device, right?
I haven't used it yet. But I think one of the only things that you have to do would probably be like doing the Touch ID scanning for your fingerprint, and then most everything else will automatically be set up.
So I was reading a little bit about this, and it's cool because it works like the Apple Watch does, and the Apple Watch has one of the most magical setups I've ever used in technology. It has like that little spinning sphere. With all those little, it looks like a swarm of bugs flying together.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just hover your iPhone camera over the Apple Watch and it sets it up. Well, the automatic setup is going to work the same way. So you have your old device and your new device, right? And what's that?
I didn't know about the little glow orb thing, and you take a picture. That's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. So it works just like the Apple Watch. So I think on your old device, you have the spinning sphere like you do on the Apple Watch. And then on your new device, you hover your camera over. And then that little moving sphere somehow transmits or maybe makes a link between the two devices. And then it moves over all your information. Which I'm going to be curious to see how well this works.
Right.
Does
it remind you? Well, you know, there's been a Mac app forever, right? The Migration Assistant. Uh-huh. When you migrate from an old Mac to a new Mac.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, the horriblest, foulest, worst experience you could possibly have in setting up a new computer.
None of their migration tools seem to work flawlessly all the time, right?
Right.
I was just going to say that the experience moving from one device to another when you're using iCloud. And how many times have you set up a new device and, like, your folders don't get saved, not all your apps get moved over, you know, your settings might not get moved over. Like, there's inevitably some kind of issue that you experience that frustrates
and
the whole
process.
And it
takes forever, right? So,
and then there's that. Yeah. And then there's that. Or even worse is uploading or backing up your old phone to iTunes and then connecting your new iPhone and trying to move all that stuff over. Like, it's just never worked well. I've actually had luck with that.
That's been fine. And actually, I have had luck with the Migration Assistant, too. I just moved my mom over to a new computer, and that worked okay. So, you know, shouldn't disparage it. But I definitely have had bad experiences. So much so that, like, you know, I feel whenever I get a new device, just set it up as new. It's always the easiest option.
Yeah, that's usually what I do too, especially because now that I have all my photos and videos stored in the cloud, in iCloud, that's really the stuff that I care the most about, right? Like, I don't care about my apps. I'll just download those again. In fact, it's kind of a nice opportunity to just kind of clean house and get rid of all the apps that you never use that are just sitting on your phone collecting cobwebs.
Well, now they've
probably use like 8 actual apps on my phone.
Well, they got there's a new feature. I just turned it on in iOS 11 in the beta, you know, like get rid of unused apps.
Mm-hmm. We talked about that last week, Lander.
Oh, okay. Well,
is that where you got the tip? You're like,
oh, okay. I heard about this podcast new tip last week. These three idiots. I thought it was like, but they did say one useful thing, yeah.
Every once in a while, we share something useful. Every once in a while.
Have you been using it, Buster?
I have not turned that on yet. I should, because I'm curious to see which apps it'll get rid of. So I'm going to try it.
Right. But it only does it if you're low on space. Are you low on space?
I'm always teetering on low space.
How many gigs is your iPhone?
It's only 64, so I shoot a lot of video.
Yeah, you're
running
out of space? Really?
Yeah.
Do you have the optimized...
Sendy videos.
Yeah, that's right. Getting too many sendy videos on your phone. That's the first problem.
I know.
Do you have it set to optimize your content on your phone?
Yeah, I have that with.
Or do you store the originals?
No, I have it with that with iCloud, whatever that is, where it puts all the photos up in the cloud. Yeah. I kind of hate it though, because then sometimes you're going back through your photos and then you're like you get like the little pixelated one that takes forever to download.
Right, you got to wait for it to download.
So sometimes that's frustrating. Yeah. So I'm sure that's the way it's going to be with the apps too.
Yeah. Our next iPhones will probably be 128 gigs, I'm thinking, because I'm guessing you're going to go for the whatever they end up calling it, the iPhone 8. You're not gonna get, like, the 7S.
Oh, I'm going to go full bore on that thing. 256 gigabytes of storage.
Yeah, wow.
Just
you're going to spend the full $6,000
on it. Yeah, whatever the new rare color is that everybody wants that I have to wait 4 months to get, I'm going to go with that. So I'm going all out.
Oh, yeah. Jet pink. Actually, I would get down with a jet pink phone. That would actually be great.
Be cute.
It would look like D.Va's mech from Overwatch, if anyone actually gets that reference.
Don't get
that. Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about sharing Wi-Fi passwords. Isn't it annoying? How many of your friends don't know their Wi-Fi password? Isn't it amazing how many people, you go over to their house and you're like, what's your Wi-Fi password? And they kind of look puzzled for a moment and they're like, I don't know. It's like, like 16 digits. It's the one that Netgear gave me when I got my router,
somebody,
right?
They don't actually change it. Find the sticky note with it.
Yeah, they got to find the sticker. How many times does that happen to you? I've been using the same Wi-Fi password for years. And I'm very meticulous on how I name my different routers, and my passwords are easy to remember and easy to give to people. Well, all of that nonsense is about to get easier because iOS 11 makes it easy to share your Wi-Fi password with nearby friends. Here's how it works. Your friends choosing your Wi-Fi network, normally it pops up that little card that asks for their password. But in iOS 11, well, you both have to be using iOS 11. If they bring their device close to yours, a card notifies you on your device that that person wants to join your network. You can then tap and send your password to that guest, and their device will instantly get the password, fill out all the necessary information, and connect to your Wi-Fi. Bing, bong, boom. How handy is that, Leander? That
sounds awesome.
It's gonna be so
I just
nice.
Blew your mind, didn't I? Yeah. You're gonna be pitching this as a tip next week.
another way you can do it too is the QR codes. You could print out a QR code with your Wi-Fi network and password on it, and then people could just scan it with the new iOS 11
That's
camera.
That's a really good one.
That one's even quicker than sharing it.
So you just have it on your wall.
Yeah, or
and people can just scan it.
Just scan it and connect right away.
Because iOS 11 includes a built-in QR reader.
Yeah, with the camera. So you just open up your camera app. You don't even have to do anything. You just put it in front of it, and it automatically goes into the QR reader and does it. So it's sweet.
isn't it amazing? Can I just say, isn't it amazing that we're on iOS 11 now, and we're just now getting like a native QR reader?
Right.
Because every device has had a QR reader for ages. It's one of the most basic things. And yet Apple just never really considered giving us one. I guess it's because there are QR readers out there that do the job. But it's kind of nice to have it built in.
Exactly, and that was the problem with QR readers on iOS was they couldn't take advantage of like system-wide usage like Apple can if it builds it into the camera app. So it finally makes QR codes useful for iPhone users.
I think iOS 11 is becoming my favorite version of iOS ever. It's just packed full of stuff.
It's got a lot of little things, I feel like, that make it way better to own an iPhone. Like the Wi-Fi sharing. It's every time it's like Apple adds things that just kind of ingrain you deeper into iOS and its ecosystem. So, and I dig it. Like, why would you get an
Apple
Android?
Pay person to person is going to be amazing. It's just one thing after another. Okay, let's wrap up with this one. And we got more of these to do next week, but let's wrap up with this one for now. iPhone's volume slider no longer covers videos in iOS 11. I know all of you out there are collectively breathing a sigh of relief.
I've been waiting for years for that. Yeah, years and years.
Until I saw the screenshot, I didn't even know what they were talking about.
Yes.
But once I saw some examples, I was like, oh, that is useful. Buster, you said you've experienced this, and actually the whole video playback experience is different, right?
Yeah, the video playback, it's not different in the Photos app, but it is when you're playing like other videos like on the internet and stuff, and so it's got a cleaner UI. The volume slider isn't right there where you mess it up all the time. It's just a little bit simpler. It's not like a huge change, but it's really nice.
And so for people that are having a hard time visualizing what we're talking about, you know, like when you're watching a video, or you don't even have to be watching a video, you could just be looking at your iPhone and you press the volume buttons up and down and it has that
big
that bar pop up in the middle of your screen that says volume, and there's the bar going up and down. So that was happening on top of videos, and now it just shows it as a little tiny bar in the top right hand corner, right, Buster?
Yeah.
When you're going up and down, so you won't have to impede that video of your
So you can still watch what's going on in the screen,
which is great, because when you're watching one of Buster's Instagram vids of him almost entirely nude doing a cannonball off of a giant waterfall, and you're like, he's going woo woo woo, which is what he yells when he's jumping down. You don't want to miss a single frame of that video, trust me. You want the volume slider to be in the top right, so you can see that that loincloth flapping in the wind as he the flying pelt, as they call him, glides through the air oh so elegantly. Alrighty, well, that's going to do it for our iOS features this week. We've got some more coming up next week. We got some other great ones that you guys are really going to love, so stay tuned for that. But that's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. Hey, is there an iOS feature that we missed? Is there a tip that you want to tell us? Maybe you want to tell us about an upcoming Apple product? You can find us on Twitter. I'm at Airfon, Buster's BST3R. Leander's L. Caney. And by the way, my DMs are open. If you want to shoot me a DM with a hot tip, preferably no nudes. Actually, maybe shirtless is okay. Shirtless is fine. You can DM me on Twitter, too. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening. And we'll see you guys next time. Kept it casual this time.
Beautiful, yeah.
9. Hey, Buster, I was just thinking, what would it take for you to leave the Churro Squad and join my new group, the Loincloth Crew?
Oh, I don't know, man. I don't think you can really send it, so you got to up your skill level first, I guess.
Hold on now. I've never actually sent it before.
Okay.
But I'm pretty sure I can do it. It doesn't look that hard.
Okay.
Can we start with like some like small sends though, like maybe like 6-7 feet max?
Yeah, some 2-footers for you. Get warmed up.
You got some 2-footer, some 2-foot waterfalls I can jump off. Maybe we'll wait till it rains and I'll jump from the curb into a puddle in the street. Does that count as the first jump?
I think so.
But our angle will be we only do it in loincloths, right? So like we're hiking up the mountain, we bust out our loincloths, and it's like we look totally just normal when we're standing there, but as soon as you jump, The wind hits the loincloth. Poof.
Oh, full blow.
And you're just going full butt cheeks all the way down.
I have a friend that actually does jump in a loincloth sometimes. His name's Crazy Clark. He's a flat earth theorist. But he's like a professional high diver who jumps
in. What?
Yeah.
He's what?
He's a flat earther?
He's one of the weirdest people I've ever met. Like, phenomenal, like, diver, like, does, like, 130-foot double gainers, no problem. Totally crazy, though. Like, believes the earth is flat and, like, rocks give you power and
it's
stuff
funny.
Like that.
Well, I mean, rocks do give you powers. That's, that one's not that crazy. But the whole flat earth thing... That's making a comeback. I've heard other people talk about that before, too, and now there are people out there that say, like, the Earth actually is flat, and no one can prove that it's round.
Oh, gosh. That's so stupid.
I mean, to their points, you really can't prove the Earth is round.
Yes, you can. You just send a GoPro up with a balloon and look at the picture. Like, people do it.
Yeah, right. Well, but you can only see the horizon.
They proved it 3,000 years ago or more, 4,000 years ago. You know, like,
how do you know,
they even
man?
Measured, the Greeks measured the circumference of the Earth, you know,
I mean,
the shadows of the sun.
Did they?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's all fake.
They've known it for a long time.
That's fake. That's fake news, Leander.
This is a fascinating debate. Perhaps we can bring this up again next week, but I better go because this guy's going to go in a minute.